Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
And welcome back to Kitchen Club with me, Serena Louth, and my wonderful friend and co-host, Sarah Malcolm.
Kitchen Club is the podcast that brings you conversations from our kitchen table. Each week brings a new guest into our lives, a new area of expertise, and a chat to get stuck into. Also, we have a new recipe, which is created using our guests' 3 favorite ingredients.
On top of all that, we also ask our guests for their healthy habit, which is something they do daily or just whenever they need to rebalance and reground themselves. Sarah and I both trial it out and discuss how we got on with practicing their habit.
This season, our recipes can all be found on our brand new Patreon page, which we invite you to join us and support us on. So we'll leave the link for that in the show notes below this episode.
Today's guest is Rhiannon Lambert, a registered nutritionist, best-selling author, and founder of leading Harley Street clinic, Retrition. Rhiannon is widely known for her extremely qualified approach to nutrition in weight management, disordered eating, gut health, and sports nutrition. Although today we are actually talking to her all about her journey into motherhood.
This chat with Rhiannon is so beautifully honest and raw, and we really can't thank her enough for being so open about her experience. It's so important that we share these battles that we go through to know that we're not alone in what we're experiencing.
So here is the wonderful Rhiannon Lambert on Kitchen Club.
Hello, Rhiannon Lambert.
Hello.
Welcome to Kitchen Club, Ri. It's such a pleasure to have you, honestly. Thank you so much for finding the time to speak to us.
Absolute pleasure. I can't wait to get started.
Should we start off by talking about your 3 favourite ingredients?
Oh, yeah. So I love the fact that you asked me this. Yes, right. So the 3 I picked, and I'll try and do it in order of preference. So number one would have to be an aubergine. Just because, or eggplant, to those listening that perhaps obviously refer to it as eggplant, it has to be my favorite veg in the entire world. Whenever I go out to a restaurant, if there is an aubergine dish, I am all over it, be it Parmigiana kind of style, melanzane. That's so, so good. And then miso. So miso aubergine would be my favorite dish. And my... how would I say my kind of experiences with aubergine? Whenever I go out, like I said, there's always a miso aubergine on the menu. Chotomate is my favorite restaurant in London.
Yum. Yes, so good.
And that's Peruvian style food mixed with a kind of Asian twist. And they have the most incredible miso aubergine with dried apricot chopped up with it, with seeds of puffed rice, I think. Yeah. And that's so good. It's the texture. And it wasn't until I started cooking with aubergine myself, I realized you actually have to soak it first if you want that really amazing texture, unless you cut it very finely. You know, the really gorgeous, gooey center to the vegetable once you've roasted it.
Yeah.
So if you soak it with water, it will absorb a little bit.
I don't think I've ever done that, actually. How long do you have to soak it for?
I literally just run it over the tap for a minute. And that's all you need. but it's quite porous, and the type of vegetable itself is like a sponge. So it's great to have a little bit of moisture in it, and then you can cook it, and it's sublime. So,
oh, I've got one in well, I was going to make what Serena's made, so I've got it ready to go. But maybe I have to buy another one and do something else with it.
Well, there you go. See, mine unfortunately has to go to my son today, which is a bit disappointing because he hasn't had aubergine yet. And I was like, damn it, I have to steam it for him. I can't cook it the way I like
it. Oh, yeah, because you're weaning. How yeah. exciting. How exciting.
It is exciting. But obviously you have to keep things very, very plain. And nothing. It's just the purest form of the vegetable you will find steamed. So that would be aubergine, number one. Number two would be figs. And I had to really think if figs would come first or aubergine second, but aubergine just pipped it to the post there. Figs, whenever I think of my favorite fruit, it's always a fig. And this time of year that we're recording, we're just coming out of that kind of season where they were just so good. When they're fresh, they're unbelievably delectable. And there's no wonder why in the olden days, so I used to read Philippa Gregory books a lot, kind of fiction based on Tudor times. And in those sorts of books, they'd always say, oh, and a fig would be this incredible treat that they would get, the royal families. And you can totally see why, because when you pick one fresh off a tree, there is nothing like it. Yeah. I remember working on a retreat in France when I was at university. I think it was in my second year, and I was an assistant. I was basically working in the kitchen on a health retreat. And I remember having to go to the tree and eating all the figs when I was meant to be picking them from all the guests. And I ate so many, I felt sick. So, but now they are my favorite fruit in the world. And my wedding day, I actually had a fig crumble because I'm obsessed with crumble and figs. Oh, look at you both there. Yeah, that was a good dessert. I had that one made up especially for everybody at the wedding. So.
Yes. And I feel like
never
fig.
Think of putting figs in a crumble.
I know. It's because I guess it's just not traditional. The traditional thing is apple or berries, isn't it? Or perhaps a rhubarb type style in the UK. But try a fig. The texture is insane. And I think it's extremely sweet. You have to have a sweet tooth because it kind of caramelizes as it's cooked. So that on top of the quite sweet topping, unless you take the sugar out, of course, and you try and do a kind of healthier nut-based crumble topping. But yeah, it's good.
Oh, sounds divine. And your third one, Ree?
Yes, I'll try and keep this shorter. I'm giving you very long answers.
No, do it.
It's great.
You can tell I'm a foodie, right? The third one is truffle, and that is the most indulgent thing ever. And I just spent the most money I've ever spent on my food shop because I bought truffle oil, because I'm obsessed. Ever since I went to Boysenberry in Fulham, which is a really nice kind of cute cafe, and they do the most incredible truffled eggs. And now I'm not going into London as much. I was like, I'm missing my truffle. So I bought some truffle oil, and gosh, a tiny bit goes a long way. It's so potent that it lasts forever.
Serena and I kindly got sent some Bellazy products, and they've got a really delicious artichoke pesto with truffle in it. And I've had it all weekend, so I'm so truffled out, but it's incredible.
Yeah, it's very rich, isn't it? I think it's one of those ones where if you're lucky enough to go to Italy or somewhere, you have to have fresh truffle in your pastas and things when you're away, because it's just one of those ingredients that it's a bit much of a muchness sometimes. But then when you pull it out the cupboard after a while, you're like, oh, yeah. That's good.
You're making me so hungry.
It is lunchtime.
My best truffle thing is my husband is obsessed with making truffle popcorn.
Ooh.
Pop it, you're like, how do you, like homemade popcorn, truffle oil and loads of mold and sea salt. And it's so good.
I wonder if I could add cheese as well to truffle. Truffle cheese, is that sounding a bit much right now?
No, not at all. Yum. Serena, why don't you tell us what recipe you have created?
I'm going to be really honest. I'm really naughty. I know what I'm going to make you, but I haven't made it yet. I've got it blocked out in my diary tomorrow, and then I'm going to send you the recipe. Yay. We are going to be having virtually baked truffle, aubergine and mushroom balls in like a herby tomatoey sauce with flatbreads.
Yeah.
And then for the figs, because You gave us three that I couldn't squeeze together. No. I love the challenge of trying to put all three together, but it just wasn't going to happen. And then some oaty fig cookies, which hopefully you will love if you love fig crumble, because it's kind of the same ingredients, but done differently.
Do you know, oats nearly were one of my top three choices. So the fact that that's made it, bingo, that sounds delicious. Thank you.
Perfect.
I mean, usually we'd cook it for you, Ree, but
I know. Sadly, we will one day.
Yeah, let's do that. When all this is over, I'll come over for the balls and the oat cookies.
Perfect.
Right, let's get into the meaty part of it all, of what we want to speak to you about. Because obviously, Ree, you are so known for being a nutritionist. That is what you do day to day. But you've recently become a mother. And what an experience that is. And I think it's such an incredible time to talk about motherhood in what we've been moving through. So we want to speak to you about that and sort of your experiences, because I know so many women, personally, I know them, and I know that so many women will benefit from hearing this in a time that they might have felt a bit alone. So first of all, we just want to know how you're finding it all. Like, how has this transition been for you, and having your gorgeous son Zachary in this time?
Well, first of all, obviously the answer that I'm sure every mum would say is it's the best thing in the entire world. The love is just overwhelming. And with the love, though, comes this also overarching worry, because you are keeping a child alive. You're feeding a child. I'm still breastfeeding some from my own body, is keeping this child alive, which first of all is pretty crazy to get your head around.
Yeah.
Your body isn't yours anymore. You're sharing it for potentially a year or more, or however long that journey may be. And if you're formula feeding your baby, it's the same thing. It's up to you to give that milk to your child. You know, you are very responsible. And the bond is incredible. I described it to a friend the other day as imprinting, like on Twilight. It's, you know, you imprint on the wolf, or the wolf on the object of love. Yeah, you know. And it's, you can't, all you can think about 24/7 is that being. It's incredible. But it's been extremely challenging. I think if we discuss the current time, obviously I gave birth in the peak of the pandemic. So actually the week of the recorded highest cases for me in the hospital. And I'd planned a home birth and it didn't happen. And I ended up in the hospital, and I was terrified, to be honest, because I think at that time we didn't know the impact that coronavirus would have. We didn't know anything. Everybody was just pretty scared. Didn't have any food on the supermarket shelves. It was a very strange time to be having a baby. And of course, then you're in isolation with a baby. So for me, not having anyone come around to see your child meant there were pros and cons. You develop this incredible bond with your child, and my husband got to be at home for much longer than he would have done. And both of us didn't have any maternity or paternity leave because of the nature of our jobs. Mm. So we were given this time we wouldn't have otherwise had. So that is a blessing.
Yeah.
And the downside is that my mental health was immensely affected. So I developed psychosis in the hospital. I still sometimes do hear Zachary crying when he's not. And that's tough. I think, and I'm very open and honest about the fact that I didn't even know what psychosis was before I had a baby. I didn't know that that was a common, more common than you think, side effect of giving birth.
For anyone who doesn't know, Ree, could you just explain a little?
So postpartum psychosis can manifest in a variety of ways. I think the shape and form mine took on was that other people walking around became vessels for another voice that I was hearing, telling me that, like, my child will be taken away from me because of coronavirus, because that was the panic at the time. I believed people were watching me, talking about me, saying bad things about me, that I'm a terrible mum. Because you have a lack of sleep for so long. So sleep deprivation can cause these thoughts to manifest. And I'm probably, to be honest, I'm sure a psychologist or psychiatrist could give a much better explanation than I could, because I'm talking as it's lived experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. But for some mums, it can be a lot worse than even I had it, to the point where they're not safe to be around their baby. So for me, it was that I was scared my baby would be taken away from me. For other mums, it can be that the baby becomes a scary thing for them. So it's really, really serious. But yeah. If you think about it, I mean, I didn't sleep for 5 days in the end straight. I was up for 24 hours a day for 5 days. That's not healthy. I mean, they torture people with sleep deprivation. That's the effect it has. So I think psychosis is something people should be aware of, because many women going in don't have the dreamy labor. And great if you do, and that's wonderful, but you should be aware that sleep is such an important part. And if you're able to get support with your partner or your friend, whoever's in the hospital, just to get 2 or 3 hours, that's all I needed, was a 3 to 4 hour stint to feel more human again.
Mm. How were you able to get out of that experience just from the sleep? Did that help straight away, kind of?
I've had a lot of therapy for it, which helped, because it took a while for me to gain my confidence again in terms of the fact that COVID wasn't going to harm my baby and me. And that took a long time. Because obviously the news every day, I switched off the news, so I was just seeing a death toll rising, and it wasn't a very pleasant time. It causes anxiety to heighten massively. But my husband was allowed in, because of course, another part of this I should add is that I had to give birth and then not see, I was alone. My husband, I had to give birth in a mask and he had to leave. And I didn't see him for 5 days. So he didn't meet his son. And they only let him in because my mental health deteriorated so badly.
Wow.
So once he came in and was allowed to be with me, that helped, because I had support, a friendly face. Yeah. I knew I wasn't dealing with this mental health illness by myself, which at the time we hadn't recognized in the hospital, because I'm on a ward with loads of other people. I just internalized.
Yeah. Gosh, so scary.
Yeah, you don't know what's real and what's not. And I remember when he came in, he was sat in the chair, because I was moved to a side room, because obviously the more voices I could hear on the ward, the worse it was getting. And I remember hiding behind his chair at one point, saying, they're outside the room. There's these people, they're going to come and take me and Zachary away. And I was absolutely, it's making me well up a bit when I talk about it, but it's important that you do.
Yeah.
And he was like, there's no one there. And I had a go at him and said, he couldn't hear it properly. It's like, your hearing's wrong. They're definitely out there.
Wow.
That's awful. When I think I'm quite a switched on person normally, and I'm quite resilient, and for suddenly to be hit by something. So it took him doing a night feed for me, basically, and I learned how to pump in the first week, which isn't normally advised for mums, but actually helped in the long term with my milk supply. And Zachary now takes bottle and boob, which is great for me, because he's had it from week one of his life.
Yeah.
So it means I'm able to give him to my husband to do a feed so I could have a break. Because in the early days, they're attached to you pretty much 24/7. And it's hard to get any rest. And let alone being in a hospital, you get checks every 4 hours. So someone will always be in your room, and it's relentless.
It really brings home what women go through, doesn't it? I mean, it's hard enough giving birth in its own time, let alone in the middle of the height of a pandemic. Just wow.
Yeah, and it could have been a lot worse. You know, Zachary nearly ended up in the intensive care unit for breathing when he was born, but he miraculously suddenly started breathing, and we could have, God, I can't even tell you how that felt. But there are our mums there that had to go through that without any support with them, with their baby is in an incubator and is fighting for its life without support. There are so many situations you hear of women that had miscarriages at that time that couldn't have anybody with them in the hospital. This year in general has been tough for all NHS, and everybody suffering with any sort of ailment at the moment or condition. But as we're discussing pregnancy and mums, I think that was overlooked by the government for quite a while. And now they're finally starting to realise, actually, I think women need partners with them when they're going for these important life-changing moments. It's quite important.
Definitely.
I've never had such a strong physical reaction to someone telling a story. I feel sick and I feel like my eyes are welling up. Yeah. I can't imagine what that was like for you.
I'm sorry to make anybody feel that way, because it is sad. And, you know, I almost feel guilty sometimes still. And this is where therapy comes in, where if I speak about it, because I don't want other people to feel that way. But equally, you have to speak, because otherwise you wouldn't be aware. And I actually had people message me on my social media accounts after I'd shared that this had happened to me, saying, this has just happened to me. And if I hadn't heard your story, I wouldn't have known that I was hearing things that weren't true. And I managed to get the help. So actually, the more we discuss things as women, that we're open and we talk, you won't be as shocked when it happens to you. Because no. It wasn't even brought up in my antenatal that that could be a thing. I didn't know what it was.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the beauty and power of social media in that way, isn't it? That you can help someone's life so much just by sharing what you're going through.
Oh, 100%. And one thing that definitely needs to improve is hospital food, because that was not good. And I couldn't leave. You can't leave in COVID to go out and get food, or people can't bring anything in. So you are stuck with the meals that they provide you in hospital. Yeah, that needs to get a bit
an experience
better.
In itself.
Yes. Yeah.
And the reason I think it's so important to talk about it, I've never heard of postpartum psychosis. And I know lots of people that have babies. I'm an aunt four times. And like, you know, for it to be something that has never even crossed my radar, when like I'm not completely detached from the baby scene, from, you know, people with children, then that's incredible to be able to share that with people.
Well, I think a lot of people may not even realize sometimes, and it doesn't have to be like with every kind of mental health disorder or experience, that it comes on a spectrum. And there are some people that will suffer with it to extremes, like I did very acutely in that moment in time. And there are some people where it can be chronic, so it can be ongoing. And I think with sleep deprivation in particular, new parents are so susceptible to hearing things. And actually, even my partner's admitted sometimes, it's like, oh, is that Zachary crying? Because you're so sleep deprived, it rings to you. And I'm sure a lot of mums, if you do ask them, like, oh, if you ever heard your baby crying when he's not, they'll actually say, well, yeah, sometimes I think I do, and I have to check the monitor. And I'm like, oh, it's fine.
Yeah.
So we don't realize the impact it has on our mental health. The sleep deprivation is so tough. And for so many women, it's really on them, because if you're not expressing into a bottle feed as well, and it's purely on the boob, no one else can do that for you but you. So for women are heroes. I mean, they are warriors. There's a reason that women were chosen to do this job, can I just say?
Yes, definitely. Go women.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you just do it. I used to think I couldn't cope without 8 hours sleep, and I'm not advising anybody to go without that, because that is the recommended amount by the World Health Organization. But when you are a parent, you don't get it, obviously. And you just do it. You do it for your child because you love them. And actually, that moment when you're feeding is actually really special. And I know that I'm going to really miss it when one day it comes to an end. Mm,
just have another one. Do you want
to? Okay, this is the thing everybody says. And I always thought I would be that 2.4 children kind of thing. I'll probably have two, you know, brother or sister, or sister or sister, brother, brother, whatever. And actually, when you're in the midst of it, I can't even imagine having another one. But then everybody says to me, just you wait. Just you give it a year, and then you'll just forget everything. I was like, really? Will I? Because it's so hard.
Will I?
Yeah. So yeah, who knows? Who knows?
And then since you got home from the hospital, I mean, I know that was a long time ago now, but clearly being a first-time mum is just like a constant stream of lessons. What do you feel like has been your biggest lesson or realization? And also then, I guess, any particularly big struggles that you've come up against in the last 6 months?
So there have been quite a few, and I'm sure many, many mums can relate. And actually what keeps you sane is speaking to other mums, because it really, really helps. The first would be the initial worry about the breastfeeding, because I had support in the hospital and we were very lucky. He latched on straight away, but I knew something wasn't right. So mums have to trust your gut feeling, and you have to become confident doing that. Because after, I would say it was week 4, week 5, I was just thinking, this isn't normal. He's feeding for up to 45 to 50 minutes. Now, before I know it, he's back on again within half an hour. And I was, this can't be that long. I mean, I know it's long, but it can't be that long. And sure enough, my son had a tongue tie, but because of COVID, it wasn't diagnosed till week 8. So we had 2 whole months of feeding a certain way. And my son was working so damn hard to get any milk out because of his tongue tie. I'm amazed he didn't lose weight. He just wasn't growing. He dropped from the 50th percentile. So when you're looking at baby growth charts, that means 50% of the population will be bigger and 50% of babies will be smaller than him. And he dropped down to the 25th, so meaning more babies. Awesome. So he went down a little bit. And then we had to seek out private at the time. Obviously, if you're listening now, you can get this on the NHS because the services are up and running again. But we had to drive a good 2-hour journey to find anybody that would still see my son in COVID to do a tongue tie cut. That was an experience, seeing your child be pinned to a table, your baby, and literally snipped. And then you have to latch them straight back on again and be prepared that there is blood in the mouth. It's a very weird feeling. And then he had to learn to feed from scratch all over again. And that's when I could have given up. So breastfeeding then was tough. It was tough for him and tough for me. And I remember just crying, bouncing on my Swiss ball, trying to calm him down with him, trying to get on my boob. And it stalled his weight progression by, I'd say, about 3 to 4 weeks. So I had this huge anxiety that my baby was smaller than all the other babies I could see. Comparison as a mum with your child is just the same as comparison as an adult comparing yourself to others. Do not look at it. Yeah, it's the thief of joy. And your child is unique and your baby is unique. But I lost sleep over worrying because you don't see how much milk you're giving your child. You don't. There's no way of knowing unless you do bottle feeding. And I lost sleep over thinking he's too small. You know, this has really held him back. Maybe I should just give up. Maybe I should just switch to expressing only and pumping forever or formula milk. And actually, I'm really glad I persevered because now he's jumped back up to the 50th, but it took 5 months to get him back up. And he feeds like a dream. Yeah, go Zachary. So, if you don't have support, you know, and I had access to, from my social media, again, thank goodness for social media, I had access to other health professionals on there. I could see their posts about tongue ties. I spoke to other mums that went through the same thing. My friend Lucy had a baby a month before Zachary and she went through a tongue tie as well. And we both went to the same person because of COVID. Tongue tie would be number one. Feeding anxiety about weight gain, number two. Number three would be child development milestones, thinking, is my child okay? Because according to the internet, he should be doing this at week 15. Then the desperate panic to get into a routine. I mean, I know that there's, and a lot of judgment being online. So if we discuss the judgment first, for new mums, the worst thing you can do is go on these net mum sites and all this crazy advice that is not backed by evidence and may not apply to you. And it just soars your anxiety higher. And we all Google it. You're up at 3 a.m. and you're Googling, you know, how much milk should my baby be getting out my boob? Should I switch from left to right boob right now? What am I meant to be doing? Everyone Googles these types of things, but I wish I hadn't as much. And I'm a health professional and I still did it. So it's this overwhelming anxiety and worry. And being judged online, I found that particularly hard. Yeah. I think you're in your most vulnerable place and there are people that are still unkind to you on the internet. So the internet may be helpful, but please put your barriers up because it's, you know, there's a lot of times where I really struggled with online mum judgment. And it's from other mums actually a lot of the time, which is quite worrying, and you just have to remind yourself they're obviously not in a good place. So
no, and it's probably just a projection of their own feelings as well,
yeah,
being moved into something else. Yeah,
exactly, about feeding. You know, I was trying, I think I remember saying, oh, I've got caught out, I just went for a walk. And in the newborn days you end up breastfeeding in the middle of the road because you can't go in COVID, you can't go into a building anywhere and sit down. There's nowhere to go. So you are stuck with the road and that's what happens. But I remember I showed that and then I had some comments saying, oh, you're just saying that breastfeeding's the only, blah, blah, just, I'm not even going to go into it. But that would be another thing, online judgment. And then sleep routine. So we started with Zachary at week 8, we started putting dark and getting him used to night and day, which I think is very helpful for parents. We would eat in the dark in our flat because we had a one bed flat at the time when we had Zachary, and the kitchen was the living room, was everything. The sleeping room was kind of everything. And then there was our bedroom. We would do that, which got him used to it. But then week 14 came and we were able to start doing nap routines. And from then onwards, we've never looked back and it's been really helpful.
I bet. Wow. Given you a whole time
Yeah, no. You have to teach your baby to self-settle. And that was the hardest thing. And it can take some babies a very long time. And there are some people that believe that until they're 6 months old, there's no point even starting with routines. However, I can say from anecdotal experience, for me, it definitely worked. From 4 months onwards, we had a few occasions where he slept through the night. And that's because of the nap routine in the day. Mm. But every baby is different.
Of course, yeah. One of our friends actually recently told me about the app. Is it called Leap?
The Wonder Weeks.
Wonder Weeks. Okay. Yes. But it has the leaps in it when your baby's having a leap. And that just sounds like genius, because every baby is different in their physical development, mental development. So, I mean, for anyone who doesn't know about that, do you know about this, Serena? Your sister?
No, I was about to say, what is that?
No, Rhiannon, tell us a little
bit. So a leap is every parent's worst nightmare. It's absolutely horrendous, because they're going through all these developmental growth things and it keeps them from sleeping well. They may become more clingy. A child may cry for no reason whatsoever. It's a lot going on in their brain. The worst one we had was when Zachary learned to roll over. And suddenly he would do it in the middle of the night, all night long. And we were running into the room constantly, just trying to turn it back. And he'd start crying because he's upset. He's like, what's just happened to me? Yeah. So it's when they master a new skill, or they see patterns for the first time, or they realize things are moments in time. So they'll see a ball, instead of dropping a ball to the ground and they only see it at the top and at the bottom, they'll see the transition where it hits the bottom and may bounce back up. And to them, that's a huge moment. So this Wonder Weeks app is again debated in literature as by some people not being accurate and evidence-based and you should ignore it. And then by other people, and I've actually found it really useful, being extremely helpful, because it gives a window of time where your baby may potentially be going through these different developmental growth spurts. For me, it's been accurate every single time. But obviously you take everything with a pinch of salt.
Yeah, of course.
But it's so reassuring, because I use this app whenever he's going for a bad spell and he's not sleeping and he's not teething. And teething is another thing, but he's not teething. And I'm thinking, what is going on? I look on the app. I'm like, oh, there's a rain cloud there. It's a difficult time.
Yeah.
It's reassuring. It's very educational.
I bet. When I heard about it, it kind of made me think of a period tracking type thing where you're like, oh, why am I feeling so anxious or angry? And then you're like, I went due on my period.
Yeah.
That's why it all slots into place.
That's the one good thing. If anyone out there is breastfeeding and listening, is for lots of people, it does delay your period for quite a while. So I still haven't had mine back yet. And I'm 6 months into breastfeeding. And to be honest, I'm quite enjoying it.
I bet. What a nice little break.
Yeah.
Rhiannon, let's talk about your work ethos and how you fit everything in, because you're so wonderfully busy, but like, how on earth do you bring it all together? Has your work ethos changed since having Zachary?
Yes. I honestly don't think I have the best work-life balance at the moment. I have to be very honest with that, but I wouldn't have it any other way. And I'm in a very different situation where, you know, I own my own business and I am self-employed, and I have staff members that are dependent on me to basically pay them every month. And with a pandemic, that meant that every job offer you get, you take. You do not turn it down. You know, you're lucky to get the work, you go with it.
Yeah.
So that's been a bit of an exceptional, an exception, I would say, an exceptional exception to the normal rule. Because whereas if the pandemic hadn't have happened, I would have taken 3 months or so definitely off doing any nutrition work if I could, and I would have really enjoyed it. But we had to, my husband and I, make this decision together where I basically just had to keep going. And it was actually easier in the newborn days, believe it or not, because they're asleep a lot of the time. Even if they're on you asleep in a sling, you can do a lot more.
Yeah.
But as they become more aware, and he doesn't have an afternoon nap anymore, we cut that. So he's got half an hour in the morning and 2 hours over lunch, which is when we're recording this podcast now. Those nap times are when I fit everything in, like everything. When he's awake, I can get away with maybe putting him in his high chair for half an hour, playing with some toys while I just run around when I'm looking at him to do the washing or the kitchen or make some phone calls. But yeah, fitting it in, you have to be super duper organized and you have to take a hit. It's either you have a nap if you haven't slept well the night before, you do a podcast or you do some work or you do some emails. And then when they're in bed in the evening, if they're not multiply waking up before 10, 11 p.m. because sometimes they go down at 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, who knows. That's when you prep the food for the next day. Weaning's added another element of preparation that I have to put in, but I've got a new machine now that steams and blends in one.
Oh, wow.
And it's a life changer. And I think I'm going to use it for me. It's a Tommy Tippy machine.
Brilliant.
Yeah. You just chuck it in, it steams it, and then you click blend and then it blends it. And it's just brilliant. No more saucepans and sieves and making a mess in my kitchen, basically.
I think I need one for myself.
They're really, really good. If you want to make a dip, like a hummus or a puree, maybe a beetroot dip side to your dish, they're great. So in terms of work-life balance, you just have to diarize things in and be extremely organized and ask for help when you can. Again, I couldn't get the help because of COVID for a long, long time. So I was probably not helping myself recover either from my mental health at that point in time because I wasn't getting as much rest. And I chose to keep my business running and financially my family need that just as much as my staff need that. So I made a choice and I'm still think I made the right one. But I would advise anybody listening not to do that if they have the choice and to take help when they can get it. Because it's even someone coming around, I wish we'd had the whole, oh, people can bring you food. But I was scared to even go to the supermarket at the time. So, you know, you can't really...
Yeah,
I couldn't really do any of that. But now I have one friend and we're in a social bubble together and we do, she comes over and helps me. So even now when I'm recording this, my anxiety is so much lower because she's upstairs and if Zachary cries, she can see to him. Whereas before I was always on edge looking at my phone when I was recording podcasts, like, please don't wake up. Please don't wake up.
I bet. Wow. What a comfort to have that.
Technology is amazing. I mean, you can literally... You can see if they're asleep or not. It's incredible. I know. Fast asleep there in his little car. And I can see when he rolls over and he's got a comforter now, which is a nice new thing. But running a business, you've just got to be super duper organized. You've got to want it. You've got to love what you do. You've got to be passionate. And you've got to put the hours in. And there is no way around that, really. My self-care has taken a bit of a hit, but I am determined to get it back.
And you will. I bet you will.
I have so much respect for you because I, on Friday, looked after my youngest nephew, who is 7 weeks old, I think. I woke up with a full day of work and was like, oh, he'll sleep, you know, feed him a couple of times. Clearly got 3 emails done in the whole day, this is actually why I haven't cooked your recipe yet. But it just made me think, I was like, wow, this is actually really fitting to have done this before talking to you because it gives you such a good insight into, like, even when they're not crying, they just, like, sometimes they just want to be held. They just take up so much more time than you could ever imagine.
They need stimulation. And congratulations, by the way, because 7 weeks.
Thanks.
Oh, so yeah, it's that precious, precious newborn stage. It just takes stimulation and babies grow and develop more from interaction with human beings rather than being plonked in front of a device or even a toy or a machine. So, and actually you don't want to be away from them. That's the difficult thing, is that you want to spend time looking at them. And at that particular age, 7 weeks, I don't think they can see very far either. So the reason they want to be so close to you as well is that they just see a kind of blurred outline. They don't see the facial details yet. And they can't see past your hand if you hold it out in front of you. So they need, you know, they need you. They still think they're part of the womb. Like, they still think they're part of the mum for the first 12, 14 weeks. They think they're you. They're you. It's very strange. So you have to... Being a mum is a responsibility that shouldn't be taken lightly. It's, you know, you are now a caregiver as well. And I think it's a joyous thing, but it's also a decision and it should be taken seriously.
And we've had lots of, we've had a few episodes already with people where we've talked about periods and fertility and stuff. So we'd love to just hear briefly about how your experience with pregnancy was, if you're happy to share that with us.
Yeah. Pregnancy is fascinating, isn't it? I think the whole thing just blows my mind. I remember seeing Sarah at Mortimer House. We were there together and I was like growing this baby. It was just the weirdest thing. So my pregnancy journey, Unfortunately, I was ill throughout the entire pregnancy. So I was one of those where the morning sickness didn't go. And I didn't actually get my taste back until 6 weeks post-birth. So it was,
wow.
Yeah. I didn't enjoy food. I tried everything, all my favorite takeaways, everything. And I would just eat because I knew I had to for the baby. But eating, just knowing you're going to throw it up again, isn't the most enjoyable experience. The most amazing thing would be feeling the kicks and the movement and those magical moments. But pregnancy is tough. I'm going to keep it real by saying I struggled. I was so tired. I had pelvic girdle pain as well towards the end. So walking was blooming painful. I could walk so slowly and every step would hurt, but I knew I had to keep moving to be fit and healthy for the baby. The anxiety of not knowing the whole due date thing. I mean, your due date is not your due date. Who knows when your due date is? I was 2 weeks over and it was horrendous.
I was speaking to Ella about this actually.
Yeah.
When her first pregnancy, and she said, people hold on to the due date so much, but when your baby is ready to come out, it'll come out. And we need to sort of let go of, it will be on this date. If it's not, then I'll worry.
Well, the NHS put it in your head that you should worry if you're up to 42 weeks. So 40 right. is the expected average, which whatever. And then 42 weeks for me was the latest cutoff. And they want to induce you because of risk of stillbirths, and the risk is higher, basically, the longer you leave it. But that doesn't mean that you should be induced. So it's a decision that you have to take as a mum-to-be. Now, I went with the advice I was given. And actually, I don't think it helped because I had, what was it called? Oh, my mind's gone blank. Baby brain. Another thing, memory loss is terrible. I had this thing where this sounds a bit crude, but they put their hand inside you and they move it around and they try to stimulate around the cervix, the prostaglandins, or
the sweep.
Yes. Oh, it was so painful. I had
a horrid name.
Oh, I thought I could handle it, right? I was like, oh, this can't be that painful. Oh, it was excruciating. And I remember lying on the sofa having a sweep, and then it was unsuccessful the first time. Then I had to have another one a week later. And that triggered my waters that then only half broke. Oh. And that means the risk of infection goes up. So if I didn't deliver, this put pressure on me straight away. Within 24 hours, I'd have to go into the hospital, which obviously I then had to do anyway. Mm-hmm. So there's all these different things that inductions, artificial hormone stimulation, home births are rare first time round. I know Ella had a gorgeous home birth. She was actually my inspiration. I hired the same doula that Ella had, but because of COVID, that never happened for me either. I couldn't have the doula. But there are magical birth stories and there are tough ones. And I think everybody should listen to both. The same with pregnancy. Listen to everything you possibly can if it's useful. So I had some friends that didn't want to listen to anything, and they actually found that better because then they had no expectation and they went with the flow. Whereas I like to know, and I wish I'd known more actually, even more than I'd already looked into.
That's in your nature though, isn't it?
Yeah.
To know it all. Yeah. To absorb that information.
Yeah. I feel like education's power for me. And if you kind of know, at least you know what to expect and it's not as scary. But I did a lot of hypnobirthing, and I think in a weird way, it set me up to fail a bit because I had this expectation that because I was hypnobirthing, I was empowered and I could do this and it was amazing. And then when it all went wrong, I wasn't as empowered and it wasn't amazing.
Yeah.
Just look at everything.
And I think that's so important to note for anyone listening who's experienced this or is pregnant or whatever stage in your life you're at, just to sort of let go of that attachment and that expectation.
Yes.
And it could be towards pregnancy or anything, literally anything. But we're all so different and we're all going to experience things in different ways.
There is no right or wrong with anything in life. And I think that's so important to reiterate that even me sharing my experience with you girls today, I hope people listening know that there are so many positive, wonderful experiences, and I wouldn't change even going through everything if, you know, pregnancy was not as magical for me, but I did have good skin. You know, there's always a pro to the con. So just remember that I would never change a thing because I got Zachary from it. So,
and it shaped you now as a woman, as a mother, stronger than ever.
Oh yeah.
What an experience. What an experience to be.
Just a quick recommendation on that for anybody who is really, I have like a incredible fascination with birth. I don't know why. I just want to hear it all. There's a really good podcast called Australian Birth Stories. That is loads of really honest stories, some that went well, some that didn't, some home births, some cesareans. It's a great mixture. So anybody listening is interested. It's one of my favorite podcasts.
Do you know, I might check that out just to reminisce a bit and listen to some more stories. And reminisce. I just think, reminisce about birth like you do. But also for anyone that's struggling, Tommy's Pregnancy Hub is the UK accredited kind of go-to platform with all the evidence-based advice anyone needs if they're pregnant listening. And I would recommend just checking that out for some
great
go-tos.
Thank you, Rhiannon. It's perfect. Let's end then, Ri, on your healthy habit. I mean, I feel like you've already snuck it in kind of in here. Can you remember what you told us? What is my healthy habit? What do I do for myself? Well, you say you make a date in the diary for yourself every day.
So my date for tomorrow as well is the best one I've got, because I've got a whole hour, not just half an hour. So I put in note to self now. It's this new thing I've just started in my diary, because as we've just said, the podcast may take up one nap time, but I may have a bit more somewhere else. And my note to self is that I just stop for however long I have, and maybe I watch a bit of TV, which I've forgotten how to do. It's amazing how you just don't have time to do this kind of things. Or I make a hot chocolate and I just sit there and I enjoy that. Or I call a friend, and that is my me time. But I have to put it in my diary, because that's just the nature of my life. And some people may think that's really blooming weird, but you've got to do what works for you. And once you write something down, it also solidifies in your memory. And then if you repeat it or say it out loud to someone, like now we've said that out loud to each other, I'll remember my self time even more than just looking in my diary. Then you solidify another memory and another bit of your brain is used. So
it's accountability as well, isn't it? It makes you accountable.
100%.
I mean, I would say, because we normally, Rhiannon, we trial these out before we chat with our guests, but I'm very good at doing this.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got a lot more time than you, Serena. Serena, I feel like you are someone who needs to write in your diary time for yourself.
I do. I diarize everything. And I love your healthy habit, because it's actually something that I recommend to lots of my clients, whether it's that they need time for self-care, or that they need time to do, got post-it notes falling down, or they need time to do something just for the fun of it. But I tell them, put it in your diary. You don't have to plan it, but when it gets to that time, feel into what it is that you actually need in that moment. Because a lot of people will say like, oh, I'm going to go to yoga. That's my time today. And then it gets to that time and their body's exhausted, and the last thing they need to do is yoga. And actually, like you said, they'd be better to make a cup of tea and sit and look out the window for half an hour. Nice to use your intuition with that.
Intuition is so important. And actually, you made a comment, as well, both of you have throughout this podcast, saying, oh, well, you know, obviously I don't have a baby, but it's all relative. And I think it's so important that before I had a baby as well, I was equally stressed for time. It's just, you deal with what your life throws at you at that point in time. So you don't need to feel guilty about taking a bit of time out for you just because your friend may be busier than you. It's still relative to you. And I think that's so, so important. And on the exercise front, I used to look at exercise as a bit of me time as well. And I guess in a way it is, but it doesn't really nourish the soul for me in the same way as sometimes taking a bit of time out. And I've never exercised so little in my life right now. So, and I can honestly say just walking around is sometimes enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Brilliant advice. Oh, Rhiannon, thank you so, so much for coming on. It has been such a joy to speak with you.
Good. Well, thank you. And I really hope that it's been helpful sharing my experiences with your lovely listeners. And thank you to both of you and for this amazing recipe, which I cannot wait to try.
I know. We both were planning it and we were like, this sounds amazing. Uh-huh. This is going to be so great. So I'm excited to try it too. Thank you, Rhiannon. Have a lovely day.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you so, so much, Rhiannon, for joining us. It continues to amaze me just what women go through and how absolutely wild and also magnificent our bodies are. It's been such a tough year for us all. So I do hope if you're listening and have experienced anything similar to Rhiannon, that hearing her story has helped a little in knowing you're not alone.
Yeah, absolutely. And equally, if you know of anyone who you think might benefit from hearing this chat, then please do share the episode with them. If you would like to get in on our heavenly recipe of baked truffle aubergine balls with tomato and flatbread and the figgy oaty cookies, then join us over on our Patreon page. Details are in the show notes below. Please do keep sharing and subscribing, and feel free to leave us a lovely review over on iTunes, as we love hearing from you.
You can also find us over on Instagram, where we share more content and love. So follow us there at Kitchen Club Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Goodbye.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.